In a world where magic and monsters collide, Sarah A. Parker's To Snap a Silver Stem introduces readers to a haunting fantasy realm that has captivated readers worldwide. This dark fantasy romance has become a TikTok sensation, with readers drawn to its complex characters and the raw emotional journey of its protagonist. The book's exploration of trauma, identity, and forbidden love resonates deeply with fans of fantasy romance who crave stories with genuine emotional depth. Parker, who first conceived the story in a dream, has crafted a tale that feels both achingly personal and epically vast, a combination that has earned the book a devoted following among fantasy readers seeking stories that don't shy away from darkness. The world of Castle Noor and its surroundings unfolds as an intricately woven tapestry of politics, magic, and ancient mysteries. At its heart stands Orlith, a young woman whose enigmatic past is as complex as the castle she calls home. Raised in isolation within Stonystem, a weathered tower jutting from Castle Noor's northern face, she views her world through windows of frosted glass and ancient tomes. The continental landscape sprawls across four major territories: the frozen wastes of Frist, where ice shamans command bitter winds, the merchant paradise of Roost, with its legendary floating markets, the coastal realm of Bahari, known for its mysterious deep-sea temples, and the militaristic stronghold of Okrith, whose armies guard the safety line against monsters that lurk beyond. These territories exist in a delicate balance of power, each governed by high masters who maintain their authority through a combination of political acumen and magical prowess. Beyond the safety line, a magical barrier maintained by ancient spells, roam packs of vrooks, fearsome beasts with crystalline claws and the ability to communicate telepathically with their prey. These creatures aren't the only threat. The wilderness teems with shadow stalkers, frost wraiths, and the dreaded cave lurkers that make travel between territories a perilous undertaking. Castle Noor itself harbors countless secrets within the tangle, a maze of shifting corridors that seem to possess their own consciousness. These passages appear and disappear at will, sometimes leading to long-lost chambers filled with forbidden knowledge or dangerous artifacts. The castle's inhabitants rely on various magical substances, including caspin, a shimmering purple powder derived from rare mountain flowers, which helps control Orlith's mysterious seizures that seem connected to ancient powers. The world's history is marked by devastating events, none more significant than the Great Purge, which saw the systematic elimination of the Unseelie race. These ethereal beings were said to feed on life force through touch alone, though some scholars now question whether their extinction was justified or based on fear and prejudice. Adding to current troubles, the blight spreads across the lands like a creeping shadow, turning fertile soil to ash and leaving ghostly remnants of once thriving communities in its wake. Governance occurs through formal gatherings such as the Conclave, where territory leaders meet in magically enforced neutral zones, and the more severe tribunal gatherings, where crimes against the realm are judged. These meetings take place in ancient halls beneath Mount Aether, whose peak eternally burns with blue flame, or within the ice-carved chambers of the Reedlin Alps. The landscape itself seems alive with magic, from the phosphorescent forests of the Bahari coast to the singing crystals of the Freist Caverns. Parker's worldbuilding masterfully integrates traditional fantasy elements with innovative magical systems and political structures. The result is a realm where ancient prophecies intersect with complex political machinations and where the line between magic and reality blurs with each passing day. This rich tapestry serves as more than mere backdrop. It's an active force that shapes and drives the narrative forward. Orlith's story begins with recurring nightmares of failing to protect her brother from monstrous beasts. These dreams are more than just nightmares. They're fragments of memories from a traumatic past she can't fully recall. As a child, she was rescued by High Master Rorden and brought to Castle Noor after surviving a Vrook attack that killed her family. To help her live a normal life, Rorden gave her a black crystal necklace that makes her look different while concealing her true nature. Growing up in Stony Stem, Orlaith developed rituals to cope with her inner turmoil, including dragging metal utensils against each other to create painful sounds that help her maintain control. These behaviors hint at the deeper trauma she carries and the mysterious power within her that threatens to emerge when she's distressed. Blood often drips from her nose during these episodes, signaling the physical toll her emotional state takes on her body. Rorden, though he rescued Orlaith, kept his distance during her childhood, watching over her from afar rather than forming a close relationship. This created a complex dynamic between them. Orlaith simultaneously resents his absence, yet depends on the protection he provides. Their relationship is further complicated by the fact that Rorden knows more about Orlaith's true nature than he reveals, leaving her to struggle with questions about her identity and the strange occurrences that plague her. The flashbacks to Orlaith's childhood reveal a girl desperately trying to maintain control over herself while living in isolation, with only small plant clippings as connections to comfort and stability. These early experiences shaped her into a young woman who struggles to trust others and who views herself as fundamentally broken, themes that continue to resonate throughout her journey. Orlaith's sheltered existence at Castle Noir ends when she embarks on a sea journey toward Bahari, accompanied by guards Vanth and Cavan. The voyage turns disastrous when Vanth harpoons a magnificent silver-scaled sea creature that attacks the ship in retaliation. In the chaos that follows, many crew members die, including Cavan, whom Vanth mercifully shoots rather than letting him be torn apart by sharks. After the shipwreck, Orlaith is rescued by Kanan, the High Master of Southern Bahari, who reveals he's been sacrificing ships infected with the Blight to prevent its spread. This introduces readers to the harsh realities of this world, where difficult choices about sacrifice and survival must regularly be made. Kanan takes Orlaith to Bahari, where she learns she's expected to undergo a coupling ceremony with him to cement a political alliance between their territories. In Bahari, Orlaith discovers a society structured around strict traditions and rigid hierarchies. She must pass a trial called the Bowl, climbing out of a smooth-sided pool to prove herself worthy of becoming Bahari's High Mistress. Meanwhile, she secretly searches for information about her true nature and plots to secure ships for Rorden, who needs them for his own political purposes. The political landscape grows more complex when Rorden arrives in Bahari, creating tension with Kanan. Their rivalry extends beyond mere territorial disputes. Kanan suspects Rorden of being an Unseelie, a supposedly extinct race that feeds on life force. This accusation forces Orlaith to question everything she thought she knew about Rorden and her relationship with him. Throughout these political machinations, Orlaith maintains her own agenda, determined not to be merely a pawn in the games of powerful men. She forms alliances with characters like Gale, a local woman who helps her explore the city beyond the palace walls, and Gunn, a shopkeeper who offers her sanctuary when she needs it most. Central to the narrative is the mystery of Orlaith's true identity. Though she's lived as Rorden's ward, she gradually discovers she's not human, but Aishlin, a race with opaline skin, iridescent hair, and crystal thorns on their ears. The black crystal necklace Rorden gave her creates a magical disguise that makes her appear human, protecting her from those who would harm her for being Aishlin. When her necklace is damaged or removed, Orlaith's true form is revealed, along with dangerous powers she can't control. In one horrifying incident after her necklace is stolen, something erupts from within her, killing her attackers and leaving nothing but charred remains. This power is connected to black vines spreading across her shoulder, which eventually produce a small crystal bloom growing directly from her skin, a disturbing development that fills her with revulsion. Orlaith learns that showing her true form to the wrong person could result in her being hacked into pieces, as Aishlins are feared and hunted by cults who believe they will bring about the world's end. This revelation explains why Rorden kept her identity secret and adds another layer to her struggle for self-acceptance. The mystery deepens when Della, Gunn's sister, mistakes Orlith for her daughter Viola, who supposedly died from the plague as an infant. Though Orlith knows she isn't Viola, this case of mistaken identity raises questions about her origins and whether her appearance has been altered beyond just concealing her Aishlin features. As Orlith grapples with these revelations, she begins to reclaim her identity, declaring at one point, "My name is Saren," suggesting her birth name differs from the one Rorden gave her. This journey towards self-discovery forms the emotional core of the narrative, as Orlith slash Saren must reconcile her past trauma with her emerging understanding of who and what she truly is. The romantic elements of the story center on the complex relationship between Orlith and Rorden. Though he raised her from childhood, their dynamic shifts as Orlith matures, creating a forbidden attraction fraught with power imbalances and unspoken truths. Their interactions are characterized by push and pull tension, with Orlith simultaneously drawn to and repulsed by Rorden's intensity. When Rorden follows Orlith to Bahari, their encounters become increasingly charged. During one confrontation, Orlith acknowledges her conflicted feelings. "I don't hate you at all. I just love you so much it hurts. You're the happily ever after I don't deserve." This admission reveals the core of her struggle, believing herself unworthy of love due to her traumatic past and the violence she's capable of. In contrast to her complicated relationship with Rorden, Orlith experiences a brief physical encounter with a stranger in a cave, seeking to take control of her body on her own terms. This encounter leaves her feeling both liberated and hollow, highlighting her struggle to connect intimately with others while carrying the weight of her past. The novel also introduces Malachi, who appears to be connected to the silver-scaled sea creature from earlier in the story. Malachi has his own romantic subplot with a woman called Vicious, who nurses him back to health after he's injured. Their relationship develops into a passionate connection, with Malachi discovering that Vicious shares his non-human nature. She has gills behind her ear, suggesting they're of the same rare species. These various romantic threads explore different aspects of intimacy, belonging, and acceptance, themes that resonate throughout the narrative. The relationships are never simple or idealized, instead reflecting the complex emotional landscapes of characters carrying deep wounds from their pasts. Throughout the novel, power manifests in various forms: political authority, physical strength, magical abilities, and emotional influence. Orlith's journey involves learning to harness her own power while navigating systems designed to control and limit her. The political landscape of Ashlia serves as a complex backdrop where different factions vie for control, each wielding their own form of influence, from the High Council's bureaucratic authority to the underground resistance's grassroots power. The most dramatic expression of power comes through physical transformation. When Orlith's necklace is removed, her true Ashlian form emerges, bringing with it destructive abilities she can't fully control. Her transformation is described in vivid detail: golden light erupting from her skin, wings unfurling like molten metal, and her voice carrying the weight of ancient magic. Similarly, Rorden undergoes a transformation when he reveals his true nature to Orlith. His silver hair and eyes bleed to black, tattoos igniting with electric light, ears tapering to points, muscles swelling as he becomes something transcendent and terrifying. These moments of transformation serve as pivotal points in the narrative, marking irreversible changes in both character development and plot progression. Malachi experiences his own transformations, with scales breaking through his skin when his emotions intensify. His changes are particularly poignant as they often occur during moments of emotional vulnerability, during arguments with Orlith, when protecting those he loves, or when confronting his own past trauma. These physical changes serve as external manifestations of inner turmoil, visually representing the character's struggles to contain their true natures within socially acceptable forms. Power dynamics between characters are constantly shifting, particularly between Orlith and the men who seek to control her destiny. With Kynan, she plays the role of compliant bride-to-be while secretly planning her escape, mastering the art of subtle resistance through carefully chosen words and calculated submission. With Rorden, she alternates between submission and defiance, their relationship evolving from captor and captive to something more complex and nuanced. Their power struggle is reflected in their training sessions, where physical combat becomes a metaphor for their larger battle of wills. The novel suggests that true power comes not from controlling others, but from embracing one's authentic self, however frightening that might be. This theme is reinforced through multiple characters' arcs, from the palace servant who risks everything to help Orlith escape, to the rebel leader who must reconcile his violent past with his hopes for a peaceful future. Orlith's journey towards self-acceptance is also a journey toward claiming her own power, rather than allowing others to define or limit her. Her final transformation in the climactic battle scene represents not just a physical change, but the culmination of her emotional and spiritual growth throughout the narrative. Survival permeates every aspect of life in this unforgiving fantasy realm. The Blight, a devastating magical corruption, spreads like wildfire through populations, turning flesh to ash and minds to madness. Vrooks, massive predatory beasts with crystalline scales and venomous fangs, hunt in packs across the wilderness, while beneath the polished surfaces of noble courts, political assassinations and betrayals claim as many lives as any monster. Kynan exemplifies the ruthless calculus of survival through his command of the merchant fleet. When ships show signs of blight infection, he doesn't hesitate to order their destruction, either by fire or by forcing them into shark-infested waters. The needs of many outweigh the screams of few, he often says, watching through his spyglass as entire crews perish. His pragmatic cruelty extends beyond immediate threats. For years, he's been secretly developing the outer islands as sanctuaries, complete with underground bunkers and stored supplies. These preparations reveal his ultimate plan to abandon the mainland population while ensuring his own survival and that of his chosen few. Orlaith's approach to survival demonstrates a more nuanced strategy, combining physical preparation with psychological resilience. She trains relentlessly with weapons master Kira, learning not just swordplay, but how to turn everyday objects into defensive tools. Her time in Bahari's palace becomes a masterclass in survival intelligence. She maps guard rotations, identifies corrupt officials who might be bribed, and discovers an ancient network of escape tunnels dating back to the city's founding. Most importantly, she maintains her identity despite intense pressure to become merely a diplomatic pawn, keeping a small garden of medicinal plants from her homeland that serves both practical and symbolic purposes. The harsh realities of survival manifest in visceral ways throughout the narrative. Characters suffer from exposure in the frost wastes, where even magical heating charms fail. The Blight's victims die in particularly horrific ways, their bodies literally disintegrating while their minds remain terrifyingly aware. Food becomes currency in besieged cities, and former friends turn on each other when resources grow scarce. Yet amidst this brutality, the story weaves threads of hope and human connection. The underground network of common folk who help Orlith, sharing meager supplies and vital information, demonstrates how cooperation can be as crucial to survival as combat skills. Even in the darkest moments, like when Orlith finds herself trapped in a Blight-quarantined district, small acts of kindness and solidarity provide the will to continue fighting. These moments of grace amidst desperation underscore the novel's complex exploration of what it truly means to survive. Physical preservation alone isn't enough. The characters must also preserve their humanity in a world that constantly threatens to strip it away. Secrets and lies form the intricate foundation of relationships throughout the novel, weaving a complex web that threatens to unravel with devastating consequences. Rorden's greatest deception, concealing Orlith's true nature from her, stems from what he claims is paternal protection, but reveals itself as a form of control. When she discovers the truth, her sense of betrayal manifests in visceral horror and paranoia. As realization dawns, I think of the room in Castle Noir with the table and the hole in the middle. What's been below that hole this entire time? A corpse? Or someone chained, waiting for Rorden to feed? This revelation forces her to question not just her relationship with Rorden, but every memory and experience that shaped her identity. Orlith develops into a masterful deceiver herself, adapting different personas like masks for various audiences. With Kanan, she crafts the image of an acquiescent bride-to-be, carefully maintaining a facade of compliance while secretly orchestrating plans to secure ships for Rorden's cause. Her relationship with Gale evolves into a friendship built on seemingly genuine shared confidences, making the eventual revelation of their tragic connection all more devastating. Gale's father orchestrated the brutal murder of Orlith's brother, while Orlith unknowingly caused the death of Gale's parents in a fire she couldn't control. The physical manifestation of these secrets becomes increasingly apparent throughout the narrative. Orlith's body rebels against the weight of her deceptions through violent nosebleeds, sudden bouts of vomiting, and paralyzing panic attacks, particularly when confronted with suppressed memories or uncomfortable truths. The black vines spreading across her shoulder serve as a visible metaphor for the corruption of secrets, their tendrils reaching deeper into her flesh as each new lie takes root. These marks become particularly prominent during moments of emotional distress, often spreading rapidly when she's forced to maintain multiple deceptions simultaneously. The novel explores how secrets, while initially offering a shield against pain or persecution, eventually exact an unbearable toll on both the deceiver and the deceived. Characters find themselves trapped in elaborate webs of their own making, each new lie requiring additional deceptions to maintain the original falsehood. Only through the painful process of confronting truth, both about themselves and others, can they begin to forge genuine connections and heal deep-seated wounds. This theme reaches its powerful climax when Orlith finally declares her true name and heritage, confronting Rorden about years of manipulation and lies. While this moment of raw honesty triggers a chain of violent events, it represents a crucial turning point in Orlith's journey toward authentic self-discovery and acceptance. By the novel's conclusion, Orlith has undergone a profound transformation, not just physically revealing her Aishlian nature, but emotionally beginning to reclaim her identity as Saren. This journey towards self-discovery forms the emotional core of the narrative, as she gradually peels away layers of deception and denial to confront who and what she truly is. Each revelation brings both liberation and new challenges, forcing her to question everything she once believed about herself. The process is neither linear nor painless. Orlith experiences moments of breakthrough, followed by regression into self-loathing, mirroring the cyclical nature of healing from trauma. When she cuts off the crystal bloom growing from her shoulder, she's literally severing a part of herself out of fear and disgust. Yet this act also represents her determination to take control of her own body and destiny, regardless of the pain involved. The physical scars from this self-mutilation become a permanent reminder of her struggle between acceptance and rejection of her true nature. Her relationships with others evolve dramatically throughout this journey. The way she interacts with Maeve shifts from hostile defensiveness to cautious trust, while her complex dynamic with Rorden forces her to confront the differences between genuine connection and manipulation. These relationships serve as mirrors, reflecting different aspects of her emerging identity back to her. Her declaration, "I'm Saren," marks a pivotal moment in her development, an assertion of identity that defies the names and roles others have assigned to her. Though this declaration is followed by an act of violence against Rorden, it represents her first step toward authentic self-expression, rather than merely reacting to external pressures. The violence itself becomes a metaphor for the destructive nature of suppressing one's true self for too long. The novel ends with uncertainty about Orlith/Saren's future path, but with a clear indication that she has begun the difficult process of integrating her fragmented self. Her growing acceptance of her Aishlian abilities, particularly her connection to the Crystal Gardens, symbolizes her gradual embrace of her complete identity. Small moments, like when she allows her crystalline tears to fall freely instead of hiding them, demonstrate incremental steps towards self-acceptance. As the author notes in her afterword, Orlith has so much healing to do, but that needs to happen from the inside out. She needs to crack those layers back before she can get there. But when she blooms, it's going to be beautiful. This metaphor of blooming recurs throughout the novel, drawing parallels between Orlith's personal growth and the crystal gardens she once feared. This promise of eventual blooming, of beauty emerging from darkness and trauma, offers readers hope that Orlith's journey, though painful, will ultimately lead to a form of redemption and self-acceptance that honors rather than erases her complicated past. The novel suggests that true identity isn't about choosing between conflicting parts of oneself, but rather about finding ways to integrate them into a coherent whole.